Everybody. There we go. We have a microphone. Woohoo. Welcome to tonight's program. That seems a little hot. Can you pop that down just a little bit? There you go. Thank you very much, Ms. Producer. Welcome to the Malloy program, Friday night version, where because of all the alcohol we drank today and all the drugs we did, we're, you know, we always have a rough time getting the show started on Friday night. Just kidding. We have a bulletin. If you've been watching any media, you've probably already heard it. A spokesman for Dick Cheney says the former, this is the way the AP reports it, says the former vice president has been admitted to a hospital after reporting discomfort. And the spokesman, Peter Long, yeah, that's his name, Peter Long, says Cheney was not feeling well Friday afternoon and was seen by his doctors at George Washington University Hospital. I don't know. He was admitted to the hospital for more testing. Cheney has had 5 heart attacks and a history of heart trouble. Well, I guess they're one and the same. The cause of his latest health problem is not clear. I think I know, but he's done too much cannibalism, drunk too many cups of blood. I turned on the computer this morning and made the big mistake of going to AOL, which I do every morning, but and it's always a mistake. What a what an organization AOL is! They're still in business. I'm surprised. But anyway, the first thing that leaps off the page is Tori Spelling : quote, Farrah Fawcett contacted me after death. End quote. I'm sorry. I realize that we should be deathly serious on this program because everything is deathly serious. And nothing is fun anymore. Nothing is light and airy. Spring will never return. We're all going to die. With our lungs full of flaming oil. I understand all that. But when I see a headline that says, Tori Spelling, : Farrah Fawcett contacted me after death, that stops me cold. And I realize that maybe, just maybe, we're going to survive this Deepwater Horizon catastrophe. Maybe all the crap washing up on all the beaches down the Florida Panhandle is going to miraculously disappear. Here's what the story says. This is an interview with Out Magazine. Tori Spelling, you know who she is. You know, her father was Aaron Spelling, who produced all those. He produced Charlie's Angels, of which Farrah Fawcett was one, of course. Anyway, Tori Spelling says, quote, it was pretty surreal. We were neighbors for years. She basically wanted me to give a message to her son Redmond and to her family. And she was doing these very specific call-outs for things they would understand, end quote. Now, lest you think this just spontaneously occurred, no. The incident occurred over the phone with TV psychic John Edward. What's his program? Crossing Over? spelling. I'm sorry, folks. If you don't like this, you can move on and come back in about 5 minutes. I wouldn't blame you. Anyway, Tori Spelling says TV psychic John Edward, quote, he offered to do a reading with me, and I was hoping I would be able to talk to my dad. I'd lost a best friend a long time ago, and I was hoping he would come through. And then all of a sudden, Farrah Fawcett's coming through, Spelling says. Now, it's worth noting at this point that Tori Spelling is on a promotional tour for her new book, Uncharted Territory. You get it? Uncharted Territory.
Oh, I got to get that one.
Miss Spelling seems to have no doubt about the incident. Quote, if it had been some psychic that I'd walked in off the street for $5, it would have been different. But it came through John Edward. Woo-hoo-hoo! He's a medium, so he channels people. No, not the adulterer. That's Edwards. I've been to regular psychics that turn over cards, tarot cards, and sort of read your future, that type of thing. But with John Edward, literally, people just come to him and say things that they want the person to hear. I guess that means dead people. Oh, my God. Yes? You were going to add to this
I just find it very sad that Tori Spelling was dissed by her dad from beyond the grave.
Didn't show up.
Didn't come.
Yeah, didn't show up.
Just Daddy! Shut up. You got it all now. What else do you want?
Spelling says she and her husband, Dean McDermott, contacted Dean's deceased parents together. Tori says, quote, they were coming through. And they were saying things that literally only Dean would know that I had no idea about. So, I don't know. I believe in all of that. I thought Tori Spelling was Jewish. Isn't this against Jewish law to do this? I know it's against Christian spookism, but isn't it against Jewish spookism? Huh? What? Can't hear you.
Maybe she's a Kabbalist.
Anyway, it goes on. Though she's a complete believer in mysticism, Spelling doesn't understand why Farrah Fawcett spoke to her. Tori says, quote, I can't believe she came through to me, the most non-confrontational person in the world. What am I supposed to do with this information? I've actually written a letter to Ryan O'Neill and explained to him in the letter everything that happened. I said, if none of this makes sense, please don't think I'm crazy. This literally happened. I'm just passing on information. But it was pretty bizarre at the time. End quote. In the rest of the interview with Out Magazine, Ms. Spelling also discusses jury duty, unused business ideas, and gay uncles.
Gay uncles on you. Oh, my God. Oh, and don't forget, I've got a book. Oh, my God. Farrah Fawcett comes through,
doesn't come out. Once you get there, apparently you can't come out, but you can come through. I don't believe I actually just spent 8 minutes on that, but I did, didn't I? Well, I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I could have spent the 8 minutes wishing and hoping about Dick Cheney, but that would be very unseemly. And besides, the Sabbath began just a couple hours ago, so. We'll be back. And I have a new one here from Gregory Patton, Greg Patton, who writes with the Orlando Independent Examiner. He has a question, and I'm going to answer it for you with Greg's own words. Here's the question. Would a hurricane in the Gulf this year be called an oil cane? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Springing for some new video streaming stuff that will be here Monday. So, just in case you watch the program on the net and want us to get some better equipment, we're going to do it. Mike writes, regarding Cheney, by now I'm sure you've heard of Cheney being admitted to the hospital for the weekend for chest discomfort. Can you answer me why people in the media feel obliged to wish him a speedy recovery? neither he nor his daughter Liz have any right to happiness, and the only reason I would wish him a speedy recovery is because there's an officer from The Hague in the room swinging handcuffs. Other than that, he has absolutely no redeeming qualities about himself, and as far as I'm concerned, he is using perfectly good blood that someone else could be using. Odds are, the pains in his chest is the monster from Alien trying to get out. I would understand if you don't read this on the air, but once again, I have that birth defect, you know. No governor. That's from Mike. The monster from Alien trying to get out. All right. Well, let's hold off on oil cane. That's pretty scary. What Greg wrote at the Orlando Independent Examiner. we'll share it with you when we come back after the break at the bottom of the hour. Oh, by the way, I guess you already know that the U.S. State Department, I don't know if we mentioned this, maybe we did, maybe we didn't, but the U.S. State Department has, that's Hillary Clinton's organization, they gave Blackwater, or Z, they gave Blackwater an 18-month contract worth about $120 million to guard U.S. consulates in Afghanistan. Why? We're the liberators, right? Now, Blackwater, of course, was kicked out of Iraq by the Iraqi government after Blackwater mercenaries massacred at least 17, probably more like 40 or 50 civilians. And that was simply the most notorious example of Blackwater acting in a manner that respected neither common decency nor American national interests. Anyway, when this incident came to light a couple of years ago, back then, before Hillary was Secretary of State and part of the real power structure in the country, back then she said, quote, "These private security contractors have been reckless and have compromised our mission in Iraq. The time to show these contractors the door is long past due," end quote. What happened? Hillary! The CIA, according to Politics Daily, the CIA has hired the private security firm Z Services, Blackwater, to guard its facilities in Afghanistan and elsewhere. It was reported Thursday. Contracts worth about $120 million. News of the contract comes after a federal commission investigating war zone contractors criticized the State Department this week for granting the deal to guard U.S. consulates under construction in Afghanistan. Oh, really? We're building consulates there now. Oh, I'll be damned. Oh, Blackwater won the deal over two other security contractors, Triple Canopy, another really good one, and DynCorp International. That's even better. News of the contract comes after federal commission investigated. I just said that. Jesus. A spokesman for Blackwater, or for XZ, had no comment. A U.S. official familiar with the deal told the Washington Post that the company, quote, has undergone some serious changes, end quote, since the incident in Iraq. CIA spokesman Paul Gimigliano told the Post that Z personnel would not be used only for security and would not be involved in operations. Oh, okay, Gimigliano, that means, yeah, we're going to use them. We're going to use them for the wet work. Yeah. How about that? Hillary Clinton said these private security contractors, that would be Blackwater, have been reckless and have compromised our mission in Iraq. The time to show these contractors the door is long past due. Who would have thought that the door she was going to show them was the door to the vault? Go ahead, boys! How much you want? $100 million? $120 million? These dumbass taxpayers, they don't know any difference. Go, boys, help yourself, huh? Of course, Hillary, we found out from the Rolling Stone article, is one of the favorites of the former commander, Stanley McPistol. Never stops, does it? Never stops. What happens to people like Hillary Clinton? What makes them lie during a campaign? What makes them act as though they are not just another corporatist running dog? Huh? What, you know, they come across, they try to come across like, oh, I'm a liberal, I'm a progressive. And then when they get, once they get in office, their real nature comes out. I wonder what that's all about. We'll be back. Stay with us. I want to talk to you about an oil cane.
Scream, you suppress, embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. From CG. Best regards to you and yours. Is the one-eyed beast of the apocalypse the hole in the floor of the Gulf of Mexico that's flooding the water with poison? Or is it the hole in the ozone caused by the burning of the refined poison? It's ironic that the poison that Americans kill and die for in order to make psycho-savage imperialists financially wealthy is the same poison that can end the existence of humanity on this planet. Buy extra ammunition, load it, cock it, aim, and squeeze. From Gregory Patton, writing at Orlando Independent Examiner, would a hurricane in the Gulf this year be called an oil cane? This is timely for sure, because on the news tonight, there is much talk about this massive low-pressure system building over, I guess, part of Yucatan, more like Honduras and Costa Rica and places like that. And if it gets into the Gulf, with the water temperature now in the high 80s and approaching, in some areas, it's already 90 degrees, there is going to be unrelieved hell. So, in that light, Gregory writes, an overly active hurricane season mixed with oil in the Gulf of Mexico may make bad news even worse for residents throughout the Gulf Coast from Florida to Texas. According to NOAA, their National Hurricane Center, a tropical disturbance over the Western Caribbean continues to strengthen and has a high 80% chance of developing into a tropical depression by tomorrow. According to Bloomberg, chances are it is heading into the Gulf of Mexico, and Wall Street seems to be betting on that. Crude oil rose the most in 4 weeks on concern the first tropical storm of the hurricane season may form and has an 80% chance of developing into a tropical cyclone this weekend. It may head into the Gulf, disrupting both cleanup efforts and oil production. The National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration predicts an active hurricane season with 14 to 23 named storms. 8 of the 14 of those storms are expected to become hurricanes, and 3 to 7 are likely to become major systems with winds of 111 miles per hour. Researchers at Colorado State University, a hurricane forecast team, perhaps the most accurate in the nation, predict 18 storms. Five are expected to develop into major hurricanes with sustained winds of 111 miles an hour or greater. So, what does that mean for Gulf residents beside the usual destroyed property and higher gas prices? How about a new word? Oil cane. And a new experience that makes the tar sheets washing up in Pensacola benign by comparison. Last month, AccuWeather.com hurricane expert Joe Bascardi speculated on what a hurricane mixed with oil would be like. Quote, depending on the approach of a tropical storm or hurricane, increasing winds and building massive seas would first halt containment operations. Rough seas would dislodge or destroy protective booms, rendering them useless as the storm draws closer. Next, as the storm rolls through, high winds on the right flank of a hurricane making landfall would cause some oil to become airborne in blowing spray. A storm surge could carry contaminants inland beyond bays, marshes, and beaches to well-developed locations. Even a glancing blow from a hurricane passing to the west of the oil slick could be enough for winds and wave action to drive the goo onshore or to more distant fishing and recreation areas, perhaps in foreign waters. During the age of sail, winds occasionally blew ships hundreds of miles off course. The wind could have the same effect on the oil slick. Now, imagine several storms during the season doing the same thing, end quote. And Art Horn, a meteorologist in Manchester, Connecticut, writing for the Energy Tribune, puts the same concept in different words, quote, the Gulf oil spill is bad, but it could become much, much worse and soon. The threat of a hurricane moving over the spill. The threat is a hurricane moving over the spill. Water temperatures in the Atlantic are now running as warm or warmer than they did during the record-setting season of 2005. This is significant. Warmer water means more heat and humidity over the tropical ocean to fuel hurricanes. The winds of a hurricane are so strong that the normal interface between ocean and atmosphere disappears. The winds begin to generate large waves. Spray is blown off the tops of these waves. The spray mixes with the air so that after a short time, there is no real boundary between what is ocean and what is the atmosphere. If a large hurricane moves over the oil spill, this chaotic mixture of water and air will inevitably also contain oil. The oil will become airborne and travel with the hurricane. The Gulf Coast is prime territory for devastating and deeply penetrating storm surges. Should a major hurricane push the spill toward the Gulf Coast, there will be nothing that can be done to stop it. No amount of planning or engineering will help. No number of visits to the Gulf by the president or any other official will stop the inevitable. The storm surge will drive the water and the oil miles inland Everything in its path will be coated in a greasy bath of crude. Even the wind may have oil in it. In New England, I have seen hurricanes and tropical storms that have blown salt spray many miles inland from the coast. The leaves of the trees eventually turn brown and fall off. In the case of the Gulf, it will be oil that will spray the trees, buildings, and everything else in its way. How far inland this oily mess will blow is anyone's guess, but it will be unprecedented in its economic and environmental damage. The human and natural losses from such an event could be historic. End quote. Are you getting the picture yet? At best, even moderate gale force winds at the BP disaster site, days away from the Gulf of Mexico spill site, could force at-sea workers to abandon their oil collection efforts for 2 weeks. That's according to the head of the National Response Effort, quoted in the St. Pete Times today. That timetable would conservatively, according to this guy, unleash another 500,000 barrels of oil in the sea, twice the Exxon Valdez spill. Using upper-end federal estimates of the leak, 840,000 barrels, or about 35 million gallons, would gush out unimpeded. Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen described the cut-and-run plan in a conference call to reporters today, in which he said, quote, realistically, out of an abundance of caution, the Deepwater Horizon well would remain uncapped for 14 days. And that's a best-case scenario in a moderate storm. Many scientists and engineers working for BP or the federal government have claimed that rain cannot carry oil because oil cannot evaporate. The citizens of Louisiana who shot this video would probably dispute that assertion. And then included in Greg's article is a video of oil rain. Should Gulf residents do as our fearless leader says and pray? Or should we start contacting relatives, friends, or real estate agents up north now? I'll leave that answer up to you. Greg Patton, writing for the Orlando Independent Examiner. You know, that's the part that is incredibly scary right now. I mean, and you know, even given all that, I realize that you don't find hurricanes off the coast of Alaska, but you do have gale force winds, right? What happens when BP's latest great adventure in the Beaufort Sea or the Chukchi Sea, whichever one it was, it is off the north slope of Alaska, you know, where they've built this 33-acre gravel island, quote-quote, so it's not considered deep water drilling, even though they're going to drill down twice as deep as the one in the Gulf. 2 miles straight down, and then 7 miles horizontally way over there to get at the oil. If that sucker goes, well, like I said, the only people that can stop that are the American people, and we're not going to. We're going to, I don't know, what do? We're going to two Molly birthday parties this weekend, right? So we have more important things to do than dick around with that, right? Okay. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
border to border and coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show, all substance, no abuse.
It's 10 before the hour. For those of you who care, and apparently that's quite a few of you, I got an email from RJ, Marge's son, the late Marge Vedic, who you all know from her having called this program over about a 13-year period. Marge died Wednesday? I think it was Wednesday. Yeah, in her sleep, which means she led a good life. That's about the best gift you can get from the Cosmic Muffin or the Hairy Thunderer is die in your sleep. Anyway, RJ says there's going to be a memorial service in Maryville, Indiana, Sunday. I think it's Sunday. Yeah. And it's going to be at the bowling alley. It's the Stardust Bowl in Maryville from 7 p.m. until closing. And they'll have a couple of lanes if people want to bowl. And he writes, in fitting memory of my mom's love of four-footed critters, part of the proceeds for each game will go to the Humane Society. It's the Stardust Bowl in Maryville, Indiana, and it's on East Lincoln Highway. A bowling alley. I like that. That's great. That's so Marge, right? Her memorial service at a bowling alley. Oh, my God. So anyway, if you're around Maryville, Indiana, on Sunday night, go by the Stardust Bowl on East Lincoln Highway, starting at 7 o'clock, and drink a beer with RJ. A bowling alley. You got to love it. You got to love it. David in Tennessee. Men that had made an honest living through hard work in the Gulf of Mexico were hired to aid in the cleanup. Rather than fish or shrimp, they put out oil boom that didn't do that much to keep the poison offshore. So these men that had for decades made a living they loved doing, made a living doing what they loved, were forced to have a ringside seat for the end of their livelihood. The smell and the feel of that passing within arm's reach. And so now they're beginning to kill themselves rather than continue. Wouldn't that be a lot like asking a man to prepare his own mother's body for burial and wondering why he put a pistol to his head rather than be part of that? Just asking. David in Tennessee. And Carol writes, Mike, have you read some of the quotes the Republicans have been saying about the unemployed? As you know, all the Republicans and one Democrat voted no for extending unemployment benefits to people who desperately need it. Carol writes, have you read some of the quotes they've been saying about the unemployed? They can go back to being hobos and they're stray animals. Evidently, this is why they're not entitled to an extension of unemployment. They have cut off unemployment for 1 million people. Some, I imagine, are Republicans. If Republicans do not vote these monsters out of office, they are crazier than I thought, if such a thing is possible. Without unemployment funds, there is no money to spend, thereby being bad for the economy. It does not take brilliance to figure this out, does it? These people make my back molars hurt. Cheney's in the hospital. Ah, the first good news all day. Carol. And Roz writes, Mike, how about that Dick Cheney? What will it take to make him lie still and actually die? He has more lives than a cat. I'm beginning to think he really does need a stake through the heart. I've got a good bottle of Champers on ice that I'm waiting to break out on the good news, but it never quite arrives. Or he could be a zombie, just feigning life and is being channeled by his obnoxious daughter. Anyway, I'm itching to pop that cork and drink a glass. When it does happen, I hope we won't be subjected to all the crocodile tears and people singing his praises on the usual talk shows. Roll on that happy day. Roz, oh my God. Some of you people are worse than me. No, I'm not going to feel anything but intense gratitude that this miserable bastard has finally stepped off this earthly coil. Really. And I'm sure on a much lesser scale, when I die, there will probably be some of you right-wing flip-tops who will feel the same way. I frankly don't give a damn. But no, Cheney is Cheney's a murderer. He's a killer. He's a torturer. He is evil personified. He is a walking a mass of horror. And when he is gone, this planet will be cleaner. And what the hell is going on up in Toronto? Boy, I thought only we did this. Toronto Police Chief Bill Blair today defended his move to seek what he called a clarification of police powers around the walled security zone that allows officers to demand anyone approaching the fence to identify themselves. What's going on in Toronto? That's where the G20, the capitalist elites are meeting to decide how much more they can bleed out of the small people. And as always happens with these meetings, they create a zone in whatever city it is, and then anything that moves inside that zone that doesn't have the proper identification and passes and permits and tickets and signs and so on and so forth will be shot on sight, you know, shot with a taser, shot with high-pitched sound, shot with concussion waves, shot with whatever it takes to get them the hell out of the way, because the great capitalists are meeting. There's more to the story, and I'll share it with you when we come back. I guess every single country where this meeting of capitalist pigs occurs has got to do this. They suspend all of their laws. Militarize their police agencies. And then they start arresting everybody. Everybody. No matter who they are. Get your ass in the back of the Black Mariah. You're going to jail. Podcast trivia coming up at the bottom of this hour. All right, in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, where the G20, all the leaders of the capitalist nations are gathered to figure out how to slice and dice what few resources are left even more completely, how to keep them in the hands of the elite few and out of the hands of scum like you and me. Anyone entering or even approaching a designated area where these predators are all gathered, anyone going near there can be searched without a warrant. All the streets inside the security fence in Toronto, this is according to the Toronto newspaper, The Globe and Mail, all the streets inside the security fence in Toronto, where the summit is being hosted, have been temporarily designated under the Public Works Protection Act. Now, this act usually covers highways and canals used for the transmission of power and other public utilities, which are permanently designated. It also covers public, provincial, and municipal buildings. It gives guards of these sites the ability to demand a visitor's name and purpose for the visit and to refuse permission to enter and to arrest without warrant. The police chief in Toronto told a press conference at police headquarters, quote, "This is not new power. It is not sweeping power. It's power that is clearly defined in law. It's not a secret." The temporary designation went into effect June 21st and will be rescinded the day after the summit ends on June 28th. Those found guilty under the act are subject to imprisonment for no longer than 2 months or a $500 fine. Blah, blah, blah. Natalie DeRose of the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, similar, one assumes, to the ACLU, said, quote, "It's a very clever way to expand police power," end quote. She said that the group was very concerned about the implication of the measure and noted, quote, "It dramatically altered the advice lawyers give to protesters and the public." The Canadian Civil Liberties Association believes this is the first time an area has been designated in such a way. Man. So if you are in Toronto and you have the temerity to approach this walled-off area to voice an opinion as to the predators that are meeting therein, you will be challenged and probably arrested. Well, you know, when the big dogs get together to feed, or at least to carve up the carcass to decide, you know, who gets the good part, who gets the entrails, and who gets the flank, and who gets the lungs, and who gets the belly, you know, when they're doing that, hoi polloi are not supposed to be peeking in windows and trying to decide that sort of stuff. Can you believe the stuff we talk about on this program? Huh? Do you remember, open your mic, do you remember back in the day when you were in school in Chicago and
you were defending Bill Clinton against Keyhole Ken and...
A Keyhole Ken, oh my God.
Ken Starr, who with his...
I forgot that term.
The garbage bag walk, the morning presser that he held every day, it seemed, carrying out his two big black bags of garbage.
But you
down
remember, you were in school, you were in college.
Perpetually.
Constantly. And you would get out, and you would have maybe an hour to kill, and you'd listen to the program. And then you'd come and pick me up at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And we would actually...
When I didn't fall asleep.
We'd actually talk about, you know, the funny things that we did on the that I did on the show that night.
The many times you were towed. The many times you were ripped off. How frequently we were panhandled.
Right.
How cold it was.
Yeah.
How very, very cold it was. Why people were shooting at our building. Parking tickets, walking stickers.
Do you remember Rogers Park with the Jamaican drug gangs?
I do. Roaming constantly outside.
Oh, my God, it made it so much fun. I would go, you'd be in school. I'd go outside and wait at the bus, at the corner for a bus to come by. And, you know, about 7:30 at night, and the gunfire would start,
yeah,
you know. And
yeah,
you could tell the difference between... A pistol.
Do you remember when the person got stabbed in our front yard?
Oh, yeah.
The knife fight from the bar down. What was the name of that little bar?
It was an Irish name to the bar.
Yeah, but
it was all Jamaicans.
There were no Irish people, whoever it was. Yeah, it was like O'Malley's, but it was all Jamaican
gangs. Oh, my God. Oh, and
there's a great little antique store in that neighborhood.
We used to think that was so much fun, living in a combat zone, didn't we?
Kind of.
And every time the Chicago Bulls won,
which was every year,
the championship, then the real gunfire.
Yeah,
then the real gunfire.
The first year we lived there, and you were on the air when they won, and I didn't know anything. I still don't know anything about basketball, which you know is a crime.
And you shouldn't. You're a girl,
right? And all I know is I'm sitting in the living room, and flipping through the channels or something, all of a sudden I just hear mass gunfire outside the window, and I literally hit the carpet. I hit the floor. I didn't know what was happening.
And you called me, and I told you to stay down.
I thought we were under siege, and I called you, and I said, oh, my God, there's someone outside, and I think they're just shooting straight at our apartment. I don't know what's going on. I don't know who we pissed off. And so you said, oh, my God, someone's shooting at our house, and then I heard your producer in the background saying, relax, the Bulls won.
Right, right. The Bulls just won again.
All.
It's just gunfire.
So
just
they're
random.
Trying to kill us?
And now in Chicago, of course, it's not funny anymore. Hundreds of people have been shot dead. I wonder how many will die in Chicago this weekend. But that's what I'm talking about. 14 years ago, 13 years ago, it was just, everything was kind of a hoot. I'm serious. It was just...
The faux place where we used to get food poisoning.
Yeah, that was great. You know, there's one thing about getting food poisoning from eating poison soup. You know,
you never forget it.
No, you don't. You don't.
It was good soup, though.
Great soup.
The irony is we kept going back.
One time you get food poisoning, that doesn't mean every time.
Exactly.
You know, one oil well collapses.
Right.
It doesn't mean they're all going to collapse. You know, one nuclear bomb get lost.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they're all going to. Yeah, right. So you just, you know. But, I think about that often when we're, as
one
you
Bush
know.
One in the White House doesn't mean. You know.
Yeah, that's true. I think about it a lot when I'm sitting down here in the cave. While you're upstairs doing fun things, and I'm sitting down here figuring out what to do for the program
folding
tonight.
Folding laundry.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, it used to be so different. Now, everything is just cataclysmic. And it's not, the gunfire in Chicago used to be just gunfire in Chicago. And now when you read about it, you see about all these young people that are being shot dead over and not over and over, but I mean more and more and more people. I don't know. And the thing about the Clinton administration, as much as liberals can disagree with him, and God knows I did, not a single U.S. soldier died in 8 years of the Clinton administration.
Yeah.
Now, there was a lot of innocent civilians, mostly in Yugoslavia that were that were killed by American firepower. So there is that. But taking a singular attitude about this, well, at least no Americans died. I mean, that's the truth. In 8 years, not a single American soldier died in combat. They may have died en route or committed suicide, but Jesus, what happened? We'll be back.
Bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Charlie in Atlanta says they even cut down trees in Toronto and closed down all the street vendors for, quote, safety reasons in preparation for the G20. The G20 people stay rich by stomping on the regular guys who just try to eke out a living. Charlie also reminds me that go to this website, Vegan Earth Day, veganearthday.org, veganearthday.org. They're having a fun event in Orange County, California, Sunday, day after tomorrow. So if you live in L.A. or Orange County, check it out, Vegan
earthday.org. I went to that website. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. VeganEarthDay.org. Pow! All right, where are we? Oh, coming up after this break, we're going to do podcast trivia. So stick around for that. Maybe you can give it a shot. You can call now to get online. Ron in Fort Wayne writes, Mike, it's so tight in Toronto that the Toronto Blue Jays versus Philadelphia Phillies game scheduled to be played in Toronto had to be moved to Philly, where the Phillies are designated the visiting team in their own ballpark. Really? Did that happen, Ron? Jesus, God. Man. Katha Pollitt in the June 28th issue of The Nation was writing about something else, but she had some stuff in here that made a lot of sense. She says, World War II is just about the last time Americans accepted the challenge of sacrifice in pursuit of common goals. When I read that and a little bit more that she wrote here, it just made me think about how the teabag bastards have tried to divide and conquer the country. They're not, but they're such worms. They really are. She writes, as many have noted, Jimmy Carter was mocked and scorned as a cardigan wearing wimp when he gave a fireside chat of his own in 1977, declaring the energy crisis, quote, the moral equivalent of war, end quote, and calling for a massive panoply of conservation measures. No wonder George W. Bush urged us to go shopping after 9/11. And in the wake of the BP oil disaster, Obama has suggested vacationing in the Gulf region. Katha said, I would gladly pay higher taxes to prevent layoffs of teachers, cops, and firemen, to improve our schools and universities, to keep libraries open, to expand public transportation, put unemployed people to work, repairing our tattered infrastructure, building public housing, maintaining our parks, staffing child care centers. And what about that green technology Obama used to talk about? Wind power, solar power, high-speed trains. There's no shortage of important work that needs to be done, and the costs of doing it are very high. The costs of not doing it, I'm sorry, are very high. Unfortunately, the same leaders who fear asking us to sacrifice by paying higher taxes have no qualms about spending money we already give them and borrowing more to pay for wars and war toys and prisons while organizing the tax structure around the greed of corporations and the richest sliver of the population. The lavishing of treasure to pay for our militarized, increasingly unequal society is the sacrifice most of us are already making. You can only go on so long, and I think most people who can still think occasionally independently, and I realize that sometimes during the day I will find myself thinking in a brainwashed manner. None of us are immune from this garbage that floats through the ether all day, every day. And, I'll find myself thinking thoughts that are not mine. They're just not mine. Conclusions that are not mine. Points of view that are not mine. And I literally have to physically stop. I mean, literally. If I'm driving, I don't. But, I mean, if I'm doing something here at home or walking someplace or... you know, whatever. And I notice that and I go, oh, my God. And it requires stopping and actually regaining control of my own thought processes. So those of us who are still able to think even a little bit, it's just getting more and more and more bizarre. When the going gets weird, the word weird turned pro. Maybe that's the thing to do. We're going to break, come back, and play podcast trivia. So stick around.
truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Look at the state of the world that we live in, where no one gives a damn about the future of children. Just building the cash flow, making a bank account. Let us expose the truth. Is that what the war's about? Because I don't understand. But what kind of a man should have to sacrifice his
25 before the hour. All right. It is time. Once again, music maestro. It is time once again, True Singers for Podcast Trivia here on the Malloy Program, where you, yes, you can win a 1 year. What is it? Subscription to Malloy Program podcast downloads, commercial free. You can dazzle your friends, be the first in your neighborhood to have one. And it's all free if you win. All you have to do is answer the multiple choice question correctly. And you go home a wiener. All right. Who do we start with here? It looks like we start with Christopher, who is in Unionville, Connecticut, listening on XM. Hello, Christopher.
Good evening, Mike Malloy. How are you? Happy Friday.
Thanks a lot. Just one of my favorite days of the week. All right. You ready to do this?
Absolutely, sir.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Maestro, start the tension-building music. There it is. Ta-da. Rush Limbaugh recently came under fire for promoting what solution to the problem of child hunger? A. Poor children could sell their parents' stash of crack for food money. B. They could turn in illegal immigrants for reward money. C. They could compete with the homeless to search dumpsters for discarded food. Or D. They could bring him, Rush, boxes of narcotics in exchange for Happy Meal certificates.
Well, I think that last one certainly would be a dream come true for him. Because
yes.
Who better, you know, to bring him his, you know, fed drug material.
That's true.
Than if not for his cleaning woman, then, of course, the neighborhood children.
Then the kids, right.
Yeah. Going wrong. But no, Michael, the answer is C, dumpster dive.
C! All right. Christopher, way to go.
May I make just a comment or two, Mike?
Oh, yeah, sure. Let her rip.
First of all, listen, again, happy Friday to you.
Thank
and
you.
Kathy, and a big, you know, salute to you guys for everything that you continue to do. I have, like I told Kathy, I have been listening to you since the early days of Air America.
Really?
Yeah, first taste is free, Mike, and I was hooked ever since. You know, maybe that's how Rush Limbaugh fell the first time.
He ingested
3,000 cc's of methadone or whatever he tested.
Oh my God! When it became public how much hydrocodone this guy was eating every day, I don't know how people do that. You've got to be a world class addict to do that.
Absolutely.
That's why I went deaf.
And absolutely. And you know what also kills me, Mike? I remember hearing on your show, one of our fellow truth seekers wrote in and did a little quick analysis. You remember when he got his contract re-upped, you know, with that, you know, $100,000 sign-on bonus or everything else. And if I remember correctly, it was calculated, you know, accounting for vacation time and rehab time, that per air of broadcasting, that lump of human waste makes what? I think it was $65,000 per broadcast hour. That is scary.
And yes.
All I could tell you, Mike, is that, and I had to do a little bit of karmic, you know, writing of the waters, as it were, because a couple of years ago, I call it usually around June, around my birthday, and around Father's Day. If you remember, I wished you a happy Father's Day last year.
Yes.
And I talked to you then about, you know, the magic and the sparkle that Molly certainly has become for you and Kathy and your lives. And listen, the best part about it was when you came on Air America and you started to share your experiences again as a, you know, newborn father. And of course, at that time, I had a couple of kids myself, and I could totally relate to the young child thing, although you're a great deal older than I am, and I respect you for that. I got to tell you, it's the kids that keep us sane. So two things. The kids, their focus on the present moment awareness and your truth-seeking, Mike Malloy.
Well, you know, that bit about kids, that is so true. I guess people can delude themselves and continue to do all the petty lying that we do once we have a kid. But to do that, it'll make you crazy. A kid forces you to be honest.
And you're absolutely right. And a present moment awareness.
Yeah.
And the fragility and the beauty that is all these children. And I feel this way about all of my son and daughters, you know, classmates. Mm-hmm. I've been a, you know, avid soccer dad, and we've got an autistic neighbor who we, you know, we deal with on a regular basis. We know the hard scrabbles that life and what it does to the kids, and it breaks mm-hmm. my heart, Mike. And I gotta tell you, your dedication to the truth seeking comes directly, I would argue, from your compassionate soul and your understanding of present moment awareness. And the only way you got that is by throwing off the horrible guilt of religion and religiosity. Yeah, and for that, I salute you as well, Mike.
Well, thanks. That's real nice. Thank you, Christopher. You made my week.
Well, just one quick last sure. comment, if I could, Mike. I know you're going to be running short on time shortly, but in all seriousness, I remember another time when I had called somebody. If you might recall, the guy who called right after me, especially after you announced it was my birthday when I called, he said that I sounded at the time like the love child of Barack Obama. Okay? And I needed to dispel that myth. That clearly, that is not the case. As much as, you know, I certainly swallowed my pride and voted for the lesser of two evils in the last election. But Barack Obama, I am no relative. And I only wish that we could have a stand-up guy like Kucinich or somebody that actually cares about their constitutional obligation to hold these people accountable for everything they're doing to our children's future.
Yeah, that's so true. So true.
So, Mike, keep on keeping on. I avidly please everyone listening, call in. If you're not a podcast subscriber, you need to be.
Yes.
And no, Mike and Kathy are not saying this, you know, they're not holding my free podcast subscription over my head for saying it. Please, people, call in and become a podcast member and subscriber to Mike Malloy.
Thanks,
Where
Christopher.
Better can you get truth seeking than from you, Mike?
Thank Amen. You. Amen. Thanks, Christopher. All right, now don't go away. Stay there. Yeah, I'm going to put you on hold. All right, well, you can release his podcast subscription now. Yeah, we were going to hold a hostage until he said that. So, all right, he fulfilled his part of the deal, so go ahead and release it. Just kidding. Sarah Palin has endorsed an article equating Obama with Hitler, an article that calls Obama voters useful idiots. Did you hear about this? The article is by Thomas Sowell, S-O-W-E-L, and compares Obama to Hitler. It's just unbelievable. Thomas Sowell is writing for Investors Business Daily. And just a couple lines here, that's all we can handle. When Adolf Hitler was building up the Nazi movement in the 1920s, Mr. Sowell writes, leading up to his taking power in the 30s, he deliberately sought to activate people who did not normally pay much attention to politics. Such people were a valuable addition to his political base, since they were particularly susceptible to Hitler's rhetoric and had far less basis for questioning his assumptions or his conclusions. Useful idiots was the term supposedly coined by V.I. Lenin to describe similarly unthinking supporters of his dictatorship in the Soviet Union. That's not true, but Thomas Sowell is a great scholar, and I'm just a talk show host, so let me go on. Put differently, a democracy needs informed citizens if it is to thrive or ultimately even survive. Really, Thomas? No kidding. Like the kind of people who would follow you or Glenn Beck or Fox News, right? In our times, American democracy is being dismantled piece by piece before our very eyes by the current administration in Washington, and few people seem to be concerned about it. You rat bastard, Thomas Sowell. Were you saying this when Dick Cheney, may he rest in peace, I'm sorry, a little premature. Were you saying this, Thomas, when Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and George W. Bush were dismantling the country? No, you weren't. And that's because you are a right-wing Nazi. You are what you're accusing Obama of doing. He goes on to say the president's poll numbers are going down because increasing numbers of people disagree with particular policies of his. But the damage being done to the fundamental structure of this nation goes far beyond particular counterproductive policies. Man, you sure can talk. Anyway, so it goes on. There's more of it here. It's just the usual right-wing garbage that you get from any
pseudo-intellectual on the political right. The fact that Thomas Sowell happens to be African-American is beside the point.
Well, why do you mention it?
Well, I mention it because there's his picture prominently displayed on the Investor's Business Daily website. This was posted about 5 days ago, 4 days ago. So, it's just amazing to me. These right-wingers, it doesn't make any difference if they're liberal or conservative, and there is such a thing, trust me, black or white, gay or straight, male or female, Jew, Christian, or Muslim. If you are a right-winger, your brain is useless. All it is a funnel. A funnel whose narrow end winds up near your vocal cords. So the right-wingers in media can pour stuff into your head like they have to Thomas Sowell, and then you can regurgitate it for your audience. And then Sarah Palin gets tweets on her page that she agrees with the guy. She agrees with somebody who refers to Americans as useful idiots. 57 million Americans who voted for him are useful idiots. The woman's a goddamn maniac. This week when we had the great big flap about one war criminal being a substitute for another, the changing of the guard from McPistol to the Fainter, and Obama exercising his power as the commander-in-chief to effect the change, we were talking about, as a lot of people on the left were talking about, the real issue is the murder and killing and violence against civilians that continues to go on in Afghanistan and will continue to go on. I'm talking about the murder and the killing and the violence perpetrated against them by NATO forces in the United States. And Chris Floyd writing today at it's either his website or where would this have been? It doesn't really matter. It's Chris Floyd. Like he says, some people seem to think that the question of which of which uniformed goober is in charge of the imperial bloodbath in Afghanistan is a vitally important issue. It is not. It is a meaningless sideshow. What does matter vitally, deeply, urgently is the imperial bloodbath itself and the fact that it will go on and on no matter what Barack Obama did about Stanley McChrystal. And as Chris Floyd points out, what really matters is this, and he gives a couple of examples. 10 civilians, including at least 5 women and children, were killed in NATO airstrikes in Khost province, the provincial police chief said today. And this, this is from the Khost provincial health director, Amir Badshah Ramatsai Mangal. I'm sorry, I just have to do the names. He said, quote, "We have received 5 bodies of civilians in our provincial public hospital. The dead include 2 female children of 7 and 8 years of age," end quote. McChrystal got in trouble for making disparaging remarks about fellow officers and civilian officials, a military tradition that surely goes back to the armies of Hammurabi. Yet he faced no reprimand or whatsoever for his admission just a few months ago that brazen war crimes were being carried out under his command. This is what he said back then, quote, We have shot an amazing number of people, but to my knowledge, none has ever proven to be a threat. End quote. His comments came during a video conference to answer questions from troops in the field about civilian casualties. And as Chris Floyd noted at the time, now what would the authorities say if you or I shot an amazing number of people who were never proven to be a threat? Why, they would call us murderers, even mass murderers. Yet this is precisely what the, quote, senior American and NATO commander in Afghanistan, end quote, declared on videotape. I mean, think about it. Let us sink in. And as Chris Floyd says, attend to the word of the commander, quote, we have shot an amazing number of people, but to my knowledge, none has ever proven to be a threat. Again, we have shot an amazing number of people, but to my knowledge, none has ever proven to be a threat. How about one more time? We have shot an amazing number of people, but to my knowledge, none has ever proven to be a threat. So, what do you call it? Seriously. And you right-wing morons, this question will just puzzle you, so go away. What do you call it when innocent, unarmed, defenseless people who have never proven to be a threat are gunned down in cold blood? What do you call that? But such acts are not to be punished because they are an accepted part of the process of the military domination of foreign lands. Wanton murder of the innocent? No problem, no scandal, one day story. Insubordination toward a few imperial thugs whose hands are steeped in blood? Shock! Horror! Wall-to-wall coverage! Oh my God! CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, constitutional crime, bleh! But the murder of children. And the statement by the imperial commander. We have shot an amazing number of people, but to my knowledge, none has ever proven to be a threat. That doesn't mean anything. McChrystal's fate doesn't matter. Justin Raimondo notes at his website, quote, our empire of bases and global military presence has engendered a whole new subspecies of American, a class or caste that derives its income, its tradition, and in many cases its family history through the long record of U.S. military intervention overseas. They are the knights of the American Imperium, not only military but also civilians whose social, economic, and political interests are inextricably tied to the growth of the empire. This includes, but is not limited to, the military contractors, the administrators, the Washington policy wonks who come up with endless rationales for war, and really the entire political class in Washington and their vassals among the coastal elites, end quote. There they are, their bodies torn, their slender limbs twisted and broken, their lifeless eyes staring into eternal nothingness. And we're supposed to care about the professional fortunes and political fates of the depraved, power-drunk thugs who run this brutal war machine? We'll be back. back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. Before we go to your phone calls, just an update to the Chris Floyd thing I was sharing with you. Chris writes, another bureaucrat of death indeed. That would be Petraeus. Obama has appointed the top imperial proconsul of the age, bipartisan fave David Petraeus, to take direct control of the wars, overt and covert, in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Petraeus is head of Central Command, the core provinces of the eternal war on terror, or war of terror, is already in overall charge of the Afghan-Pakistan morass, having previously been in charge of the Iraq bloodbath. This is no change with a vengeance, as Obama himself made clear. The Washington Post reports Obama said the move should not be read by anyone as a change in the direction of the country's war effort. Obama said, quote, this is a change in personnel, but it's not a change in policy, end quote. So the bitter harvest of dead children will go on and on and on. But the most important thing, of course, is that Obama looked strong in the savage squabbling for chunks of power amongst the jackals of the imperial court. Yeah, you spend a little time, especially you cowardly, gutless, bastard right-wingers, spend a little time looking at pictures of children with their limbs blown off as a result of our firepower in Afghanistan. Take a look at that, you dogs, you pigs. Take a look at that, seriously. And then talk about how fighting machine in Afghanistan is there to preserve mom and apple pie and the flag. Jesus Christ. I'll tell you, you know, I've said it before, this country is building up a karmic debt that's going to be impossible to be paid. It really is. You know it as well as I do. Stuff just rolls around, doesn't it? Huh? Those pictures, they just roll across the internet. Oh, look, here are more dead and maimed and wounded children. Oh, my God, who did that? We did. We did. But we're the good guys. Yeah. There's Blue in Philenbos, South Africa. Hello, Blue.
Yeah, good day, Mike. You know, it's really difficult to make the transition from where I'm sitting right now, that in one of the most beautiful parts of the world, to what you've been talking about and what I've been thinking about.
Yeah.
I had to mention also, I really appreciate your music while I'm listening. I'm listening, to Leonard Cohen.
You are indeed.
And I have listened occasionally to Bruce Cockburn, wish I had a rocket launcher. And I think I've also heard Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young singing Four Dead in Ohio.
Yeah.
Which I think is particularly, all of which are particularly appropriate right now.
Yeah.
For what's going on in your country. But if I can try and make the transition, I'm sitting in one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. I'm in a small winery near the city of Stellenbosch in the Western Cape. And I'm looking at this beautiful collection of Dutch colonial farm buildings, which is sort of stucco with the crow step roof and the red tiles, and there's a bell on the top of the thing. And even in the winter, we're in winter down here now, it's incredibly lush. And behind all of that are these jagged mountains rising up to 4,000 or 5,000 feet. And I've just been talking with, of course, it's early morning here now, I'm talking with a fellow named Adi, who's the winemaker here, and his dad was on Robben Island with Walter Sisulu and Nelson Mandela, and Adi himself was active in the ANC. And I want to, hold on just a second, I want to ask you, who Phil Costa from the Pindaraj of the Kamak, there's the R. I'm sorry. They've opened the tasting room, especially as in honor of my visit, if you can imagine that. But they've made 3,200 cases of Pinotage this year, which is a wonderful wine. Have you had this wine at all, Mike?
No, I haven't.
It's a cross between, it's not a blend, it's a cross between what they used to call Hermitage and Pinot Noir, and it makes this wonderfully robust sort of red wine. Some people don't like it, but I think it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, I was talking to Cap earlier. We came down from Johannesburg on the train to Cape Town. Right now we're about 60 kilometers east of Cape Town. But we went to a tango club in Cape Town last night. And as I said earlier, I can't believe the changes that have taken place in this country in the last 20 years, because I've been here before. I was here in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And we came down the other night with my first officer, who's the first Native Australian woman. And 20 years ago, just a little over 20 years ago, she would not have been allowed in this club at all because of her race.
Right.
And we were sitting there, and this couple came out and dancing the tango. And I could have sworn I was in Buenos Aires. And this guy, this enormous black guy, and this beautiful Indian woman, East Indian woman, and they were dancing the tango. It was like something out of Carlos Gardel. It's fantastic. And when you go out on the street now in a place like Cape Town or Johannesburg, you see this wonderful montage of people, of all conceivable races and blends of races, and, gay and lesbian people. I don't know. People in America might not know this, but South Africa's constitution specifically guarantees the rights of gay and lesbian and transsexual people.
Really?
One of the very few in the world, and of course, I know very well what's going on in the United States with this issue. At any rate, having the time of my life, but that's not the reason I called.
all of that was preamble to the real point.
Well, look, what's going on at the moment, and I'm sorry, but what's going on in the United States is absolutely appalling. I mean, you've got a bunch of swine, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to say it. Obama's a swine. There's no difference between Obama and Bush and Cheney. There's absolutely no difference. And I know that you're right wing. They hate this guy because he's black.
Mm-hmm.
But in the rest of the world, this guy is perceived as nothing more than a continuation of the policies of Bush and Cheney, and the fact that these people are being murdered, by the hundreds of thousands every year in places like Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan and Eritrea and Colombia. I mean, it's absolutely appalling. And we're hearing now the talk about ginning up hatred against Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to provoke the Iranians into a war with the cooperation of the Israelis. I mean, it's sickening. It's nauseating. But there is one good thing, and I'm going to crow a little bit here because I know we had a slight difference of opinion about this, a very slight difference of opinion. But we were talking about Australia, and you were saying, I think it was after I had talked to you the other day,
mm-hmm.
You said, I'm not so sure I'd want to go to Australia, in view of what's happening there. But as you know, we had something of a palace coup the other day, and we have a new prime minister.
And it's female.
Julia Gillard.
Right.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, yes, uh-huh.
Now, I'd had hopes for Kevin Rudd, but he turns out to be what I call the Australian Obama. a lot of pointless talk, but nothing really done positively. And in fact, he was beginning to dismantle the social welfare system that we've got in Australia.
Mm.
And Julia Gillard just may reverse that. I'm not sure. The jury's still out on that. I'm not convinced yet, but
Blue,
I think it's a hopeful sign.
Blue, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Hold on. I'll hold you over because I made you hold on for 45 minutes. Hold on a second while we do some commercials, and we'll come back. All right, everybody, stay with us. If you are watching on the video stream, we have some kind of a problem here. So the reason you're not getting a video feed is because we're not feeding one. We'll be right back. Lips that kiss and eyes that shine.
yourself with the truth. It's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We are talking with Blue, who's in Stellenbosch, South Africa.
Stellenbosch,
South Africa.
And good on you for playing Sade during the break.
We're just trying to please you, Blue, that's all.
Look, we've got a corrective mechanism in Australia that you don't have in the United States, which is that we can call for a vote of no confidence, we can bring the government down and start all over again, which is
right.
What happened last week.
Right.
And you can say what you like, but there is at least some hope. And as I said, I think what the rest of the world knows and what most Americans are reluctant to accept as yet is that this guy Obama is no different from Bush and Cheney. And I think those people who sit around waiting for this guy to finally wake up and, you know, smell the coffee, they're deceiving themselves. He's completely sold out. He's bought and paid for. He was bought and paid for years before the election. And you people have got to, you know, seize the moment and do something about it.
Well, I don't disagree. I am curious. How did you develop such an interest and a very acute understanding of American politics?
Well, as I've said, I think I've told you before, I've spent a lot of time in your country. I was in Seattle quite a while, off and on. I go to Seattle, in fact, off and on, because one of the best flight simulators in the world is there for some of the equipment we use.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent 2 years in San Luis Obispo,
mm-hmm.
at Cal Poly, so I know quite a bit about Southern California, the wine country there, and so
right.
on. And perhaps more important than that, apart from having friends and relatives who live in the United States, everything that happens in the United States in one way or another, sooner or later, directly or indirectly, affects the rest of us here in the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And what's so appalling is, as I've pointed out a number of times, and you've agreed, most of the American people are completely oblivious to what's going on.
That's true. That's so true.
Absolutely oblivious.
Yeah, it's so sad and it's so true. Part of the reason is a reluctance on the part of most people in this country to shed that, to educate themselves. It can be done. We have a very corrupted media in this country, with a few notable exceptions. There are a few people still left in American media, both print and broadcast, that try. Honest to God, they try. But with the internet now, there is no reason for people to remain in this country, to remain as grossly ignorant.
Well, you've answered your own question, Mike. I mean, look. We pay attention to what's going on in the rest of the world. I mean, we know what's going on in Holland and in Sweden and in Germany, as well as in your country and in Australia as well.
Yeah.
And there is absolutely no excuse for not knowing what's going on. None.
That's very true. When's your next visit to Seattle?
Well, I think sometime next year I'm going to be going to Seattle. And
because I've been making an annual trip there, usually the first or second week in August. Our affiliate, the radio station that carries our program out there, brings several of us who do this type of program out there.
First or second week of August. Well, look,
yeah.
What I have to do is schedule simulator time, or actually the line has to schedule simulator time for me.
Well, send me an email.
I will.
Yeah,
send
me an email. And I'll tell you another reason to send me an email. You made quite an impression on a number of our listeners that would like to correspond with you. So it might be interesting if you'll send me an email address, I can forward to you some of the correspondence that we get from people who would just like to chat with you.
Well, fantastic. Well, in any case, Mike, I simply want to say what I've heard other people say before, which is you're doing a wonderful thing. You've got more guts in your little finger than most of your fellow countrymen have. And I hope that you stay on the air forever.
Well, I hope so, too, at least until the mortgage is paid. Hey, thanks, Blue.
Good day.
I appreciate you checking in. Have a good time.
Right.
All right. Take care. Susan in Sequim, Washington writes, Mike, I'm sure I'm not alone when I say I love it when Blue calls in. He always has so many interesting things to tell us about. It's like a traveling, it's like a travelogue, only with a barometer of the political feelings of the rest of the world. He's such a good reporter and observer, and he seems to enjoy everywhere he goes and everyone he meets. What a delight. Please, is there some way to make him the official ambassadorial truth seeker at large for the Mike Malloy Show or something? I hope he never stops calling in. Susan. Yeah, okay. Can we do that, Kathy? Can we make him the, we'll make him the ambassador at large for the, yeah, okay. Does that pay anything? that's true. That's true. All right. We have a break here. We'll come back and, chat some more. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Well, this is evident, yeah. In the American way, you must get
it.
It is 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. Back to your phone calls. Sanchez is in Montbello, California. Hey, Sanchez.
Hey, good evening to you, Senor Malloy.
Back at you.
Man, you know, after Blue's phone call, I'm starting to feel just like Barack Obama is like Rodney Dangerfield, man. I mean, between the Baggers and the Berthers and the Birchers and Blue, this guy just can't get no respect, you know?
Well, you know, you don't get respect. You earn it. And I don't disagree with anything. If you know, you listen to this program.
I know.
I don't disagree with anything Blue says. I am as disappointed in myself as I am in Obama. Obama didn't do anything. Obama hasn't changed.
Correct.
He is what he is. He is what he has been.
Yeah.
He's a world-class, speaker or talker. He's very articulate. He's very bright. He's probably the smartest president we've had. I don't know. Clinton was pretty intelligent too, but he's up there in the top five or six, I would say.
Yeah.
And after a dumbass like George W. Bush, Obama sounds like a genius.
Yeah.
But you know, you're known by not how you talk the talk, but how you walk the walk. And Obama has done nothing. To end surveillance of Americans. He has given permission to secretive agencies of the U.S. government to assassinate extrajudicially, if that's not a ridiculous way to put it, U.S. citizens. He has closed nothing where it concerns the torture rooms and the prisons. When you look at it that way, what the hell has this man done? You know, I hear all the excuses. Well, look what he was given by the Bush crime family. Well, sure, that's absolutely correct. Look what he was handed off. But I think he could have gotten the support. He'd never get support of the racists in the teabag movement.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any difference. He could write a check to every one of those roaches for $1 million and they would rush to the bank to cash it and then curse him. So there's nothing you can do about these teabag cockroaches. But, Obama to me has made me aware of how easily I can be duped.
Yeah.
How desperately I'm looking for somebody to be progressive, to be a liberal, to heal the country. And it's not Barack Obama.
Yeah,
I know. We're all sadly coming to that conclusion. And also the other thing was just the fact about change. And the reason that I was calling you tonight was to discuss Afghanistan. And apparently, yeah, there will be no changes.
No.
I will somehow suspect that despite the pullout promise that was made to us all, that I'm still under the influence or under the impression that we will be increasing and escalating. Another thing is the fact that all of the pundits, I don't know how closely you were following the Afghanistan story this week with Stanley McChrystal.
Very close, very close.
But did you notice that none of the pundits, at least the ones that I saw or any of the people that were calling on progressive talk radio all through the week, nobody mentioned the heroin, the opium poppy fields in Afghanistan. And this was one of the things that, of course, anybody who's paying attention would already know that this is how the CIA finances a lot of their covert operations, is through the sale of the opium poppies. And just, I know that President Medvedev, how do you say like this poor guy's name?
Medvedev.
Yes, thank you.
Or Medvedev.
Okay, I'll take the second
You
one.
Can put the accent on any syllable you want to.
Okay, gracias. Well, he was meeting with President Obama yesterday.
Right.
We already know, because we're following and paying attention here, that there is a huge and massive heroin problem in Russia right now. And I think it was both Putin and Medvedev, the Russian president, were begging the UN to take action on this. Now,
right.
I wonder what sort of an answer did President Obama give to the Russian president on the subject of stopping the CIA-protected opium and poppy fields. And another issue that came up this week regarding Stanley McChrystal was also the fact of the cover-up of the Pat Tillman murders,
right.
or murder or fragging, as the military calls it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that is being uncovered or discussed are accounts about Pat Tillman. I mean, he was already, I think I heard it on your program a couple of nights ago, somebody calling in and saying that he was going to be talking to Ted Koppel. This could have been because of his observations and hearing the stories about why all the oil pop, I'm sorry, why oil, why all the poppy fields were there, so huge, growing so well, and why they were so protected.
Mm-hmm.
We already know.
Wait a second. Back up a minute. Ted Koppel?
Was that your program that I heard?
Not this program. I don't even know where Ted Koppel is. Is he still around?
He's on Nightline, supposedly. This was like way back in, 2003 or 2004?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking that somebody was going to, Ted Koppel was going to talk to him, recently. You're talking about 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Because,
okay.
I mean, we already know that Tillman was the poster boy for military enlistment for the anti-terror. And when, you know, he was about to, you know, bust whatever it was wide open, his notes were stolen. His uniform was burned. All evidence that would point to his fragging or his murder was eliminated. But, you know, the possibilities of what he was going to come forward and tell the nation, we'll never know. But as I was saying, there's accounts of Tillman having altercations with members of his squad.
Right.
And, you know, the fact that this had to have been like an M16 rifle on automatic and the trigger just squeezed so it fires the three shots to his forehead in what they call a shot group. And so, you know, this apparently with McChrystal's involvement in the cover-up, this is another issue that unfortunately, like 9/11, like all these other issues that the Justice Department is never going after Cheney and all this stuff, which, by the way, you were mentioning Cheney earlier this evening about having another heart attack, and then you were trying to say that that little alien creature is trying to bust out of his heart. Right? I'm sorry, Mr. Malloy. I have to disagree with you. But Cheney is so damn toxic, not even that alien will survive in his body.
Well, you're probably right.
Yeah.
You're probably right. You know, we're not supposed to mock the sick or the near dead, but there's something about Cheney that just...
he's already dead.
It just makes me ill.
Yeah.
Well, we're all already dead. But Cheney is just... he's such a... he has done so much evil.
I know.
And caused the death and destruction of so many people.
Yeah.
And he will get no justice from this administration or any administration. Nobody will ever bring this killer to justice. So if his heart can rebel against him and kill him, so be it. So be it.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, Sanchez, thanks.
Have
I appreciate
evening.
All the things you had to say. Take
okay,
care.
Man.
All right. The, you know, the bottom line on, for me, on the McChrystal Petraeus Obama thing is, again, it's my own stupidity. I didn't listen during the campaign. I mean, really listen. Of course, I heard it, but I didn't listen when Obama differentiated between Iraq and Afghanistan and referred to Afghanistan as a good war, the one that, were he to be elected president, he would escalate and prosecute in a more vigorous manner. And I don't know why I didn't really listen to that. To that statement and understand what it meant. So for an American who voted for Barack Obama to an American who is the least bit politically aware to have voted for Barack Obama and to be complaining now like I have been is kind of ludicrous because I knew, and a lot of progressives or liberals who voted for him knew, that we were overlooking an awful lot. I even went so far on this program during the campaign 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago, 3 years ago? To point out his voting pattern again and again and again, along with Hillary Clinton's. And as I've said before, it really alienated a lot of women listeners to this program. Who called me everything but a decent human being in emails because what I was doing was merely quoting Hillary Clinton's voting record and her history. She, you know, Hillary Clinton is a right winger of the highest order. Don't forget, when she was in college, she was a Goldwater girl, for Christ's sake. And Kathy caught a lot of flack. Kathy was called a traitor to her gender and worse, and a disgusting, rotten mother, and I mean, just on and on and on and on. The point being that, you know, I understood, and I think a lot of progressives or liberals understood that we were giving ourselves just a complete snow job, just completely pulling the wool over our own eyes, desperately looking for somebody who would bring the country back into balance. So it's difficult for me to criticize Obama's actions because he's not doing anything that he didn't say he would do. And that's kind of the ironic part of this, but the irony is mine, not his.
Text me when I want, I smell it everywhere.
The military-industrial complex owns this country. I think Obama is a lot more progressive than he is allowed to be as president. I'll be happy to stand corrected later, but I suspect his hands are tied. When my like-minded liberal friends challenge me on this assertion, all I have to say is JFK assassination. Martin. Mark writes from Reno, Mike, many of us voted for Kucinich in the primaries, but Kucinich lost and Obama won. Then it was Obama versus McCain. What choice did we have? But Obama. And B-Jack. As Rahm Emanuel said, where else are they going to go? Yeah, you know, I'm not, I don't think.